Hello, what's this week's Sport Zone on Salford City Radio? I'm Rob Parkinson, and I'm here talking all things sport in Salford. Joining the show this week, as ever, we've got Paul Whiteside from The Devil in the Detail, keeping Britain warm as the wind blows through. Paul, how's your week been?
Yeah, very busy, mate. He's very busy with the minus sort of six and sevens that we had last week. So I know this weekend's gone a bit milder. I was working Saturday and it wasn't too bad. It was a bit warmer. But yeah, we had a few jobs last week in freezing cold garages and cellars, trying to keep my hands warm and that. But no, it was okay. It's all good. You know, it's I think the nights are starting to get a tad lighter every night, aren't they? So spring is on the way, I think, mate, to be honest with you. But yeah, still pretty busy.
Yeah. We're also joined by James Sweetnam, who is SportsZone's very own Phileas Fogg. Phileas Fogg went around the world in 80 days. James went to Mexico City and back in four. How was the journey, James?
Well, first and foremost, to be put in the esteemed calibre as that man you just mentioned there, Rob, is a huge honour for me. I'm glad that I did the trip quicker than he did. Mexico for 4 days, a great trip, and extremely jet lag, Rob, as you can imagine. Flipping your sleeping pattern for that length of time is never ideal.
But it was a fantastic trip. Lots going on?
Oh, absolutely. Loads going on at the Mexico City E-Prix with Formula E. Wonderfully hot place, even though it was in the middle of winter. And believe it or not, Rob, the altitude nearly killed me. Walking up the smallest of hills, I was out of breath and thought that I could potentially perish. Luckily, I didn't, and I'm back here with you to discuss all things sport.
Yes, and we're so glad that you can join us tonight, James. You've got an interview for us. What's that?
Yeah, I've got a couple. So Octagon MMA hits Newcastle this week. And in the main event, we've got Jonas Magard, a former champion from Denmark. He's going to be taking on Manchester's own Jack Cartwright. I talked to Jonas all about what it's like to trash talk in another language, his love of Danish pastries, having his son who obviously watches all of his fights. So without further ado, here is Mr. Jonas Magard.
Right, I'm delighted to be here once again with Jonas Magard ahead of an absolutely massive fight in Newcastle against Jack Cartwright, somebody who you've exchanged a lot of words with throughout the build-up to this one, and you're renowned for your trash talking. What's it been like to go toe-to-toe with Jack Cartwright in that realm?
Yeah, it's been different. I think my English teacher would be very, very proud since I didn't really got the best degrees in English in school. So me going toe-to-toe with a Northern Englishman is up there with a good like degree after this. So yeah, it has been fun.
And obviously you mentioned that coming from Denmark, English not being your first language, because you speak it so well, I just forget that it's not your first language. So what's it been like to trash talk in a language that's not your native tongue?
Yeah, so some of the things I didn't really understand when he was saying. I felt like, yeah, of course, my thinking time, because it's not my first language, is a bit longer. So sometimes he was a bit ahead of me in some things. But I feel like overall, especially with the face-to-face thing, I got my points out, and I think I've put him pretty much in his place with facts and not just trash talk. So I'm pretty happy about I got my points out in the way I wanted.
And you're somebody who's renowned for evaluating the people you're fighting in every single way. You told me when you were fighting Lopez, you knew when he was sleeping, you knew when he was eating. Are you doing the same thing with Jack Cartwright? And have you been monitoring his music choices? Because I've seen on the Night Day show, he's actually into his Irish pop music, which came as a bit of a surprise.
No, but he told me he didn't like music. So, and that was the biggest lie as well at the sit down. So after the sit down, I played some music for him. I sang a little bit for him. But yeah, he's trying to be this guy. He's not really. Is I think he's actually just a sweet guy from a. He's just a little family man and stuff. But he has this mysterious thing about him, and he plays a little bit into it. But I just don't buy it. I think he's buying into people's hype around him a bit too much. So, but yeah, I know everything about this guy. I know everything I need to know about this guy. So yeah. It's just as usual.
What did you sing for him, Jonas, out of interest?
Free From Desire.
Obviously, we know that this fight is a massive one for the Manchester area as well. You've obviously done amazing things at Manchester Top Team, winning an Octagon title. He's obviously got his Cage Warriors belt. Is this for bragging rights of that city?
Yeah, of course. That's what it's mostly is about. So, yeah, it's always about the fight, but this is beyond the fight for me. It's a little bit like a schoolyard fight, isn't it? Who's the biggest dog in the yard? And that's what it's about for me.
And assuming you get the victory here, I know that you're going to be looking at Lima. And obviously the fight that night didn't go your way, but I think in a sense, it was one of the biggest moments of your career when that knee landed and you had this option to maybe take a way out, to retain your belt that way and still be an Octagon champion, but you didn't, you chose to carry on. And I think that said a lot about your fighting spirit. Despite not getting the win, was that a moment where you looked at yourself and thought that's a massive achievement to carry on in those circumstances?
Yeah, of course. Like, it's very easy to say that you're this and you're that, and a lot of fighters go out and say they're this and that, but to be put in a situation and then have the balls to prove what you are about, it's easy to say I already knew this about myself, I thought, but you still have to prove it when you're put in a situation like that. So yeah, that's what I took out of that fight. I got to prove myself, and I thought I actually won a bit from that fight doing what I did, even though I lost the title. But I, even when I'm losing, I'm winning in a way. So yeah, and we haven't heard from him since, and I'm still the big name in the bantamweight division. I'm still the guy here. I am the title, like I've said, and that's how it is.
Obviously, you are the title in a sense because you're still headlining massive events in Newcastle. I know you like your after parties, right? Do you know what Newcastle is like? It's quite a party area. You're going to be going out after getting the victory?
Nah, I'm not going to be going out this time. I only go out in Czech Republic. Nah, I will just go back home, relax, and I'm not. Maybe I'll pack a pair of jeans, but I'm not into that thing. Now it's about fighting and get this job done, and then I'll see, like, I'll celebrate with my team and the guys who's been around me. But yeah, the real after parties are always in Czech Republic, but not in Newcastle, not for me at least.
Do you even treat yourself to like a celebratory meal or anything like that, or is it straight back into camp?
Yeah, I treat myself. You need to. It's a love-hate relationship at this point in camp. I'd really hate MMA. I'm so tired of this thing. I feel like I'm always almost like the opposite of suicidal. I'm so depressed, but the only thing that will make me happy is like hurting this guy, not hurting myself, but trying to kill this guy. So yeah, of course you take a couple of weeks. I will think right now I just want to celebrate and relax and eat whatever I can for the next 3 months after this fight. But I know myself as well. I know after 2 weeks, I will be itching to get back into the fight. So, yeah, we'll see. I will treat myself with some good food and some family time. That's the thing that's the hardest part right now, having a son, is that I'm traveling all the time, going to the gym. And when I'm at home, I don't really have the energy to spend a lot of time with him because I'm mostly tired and stuff. So, yeah, for me, the celebration is going to be chilling with him and having a good time with him.
Yeah, it's going to be great to see you back at home with your son. And I've got the perfect food for you, right? A while ago, me and my girlfriend went to Denmark and we came back and she was in the Danish spirit. She absolutely loved it. I've got to ask, have you ever tried a Danish layer cake? She baked one for me when we got back, and it was absolutely unbelievable, Jonas.
Yeah, the Danish bakery is amazing. I'm lucky. I'm not living in Denmark at the moment, but we'll be traveling to Denmark after the fight, and I'll be eating a lot of cakes. Like, they don't make them like they do in Denmark anywhere in the world. I've been traveling all over the world, but I've never had pastries and cakes like they do in Denmark. So, yeah. It's just one of them. Maybe it's good I'm not in Denmark because I would have a harder weight cost than I already have. So, yeah.
And you've mentioned your son a little bit there. I mean, how old is he now? Is he aware of what you do as a fighting career? Does he watch the fights?
Yeah, he's watching the fight. He's been watching them since he was forever. I don't think he really understands it and like that. He's 4 years old now, but I want him to be involved and see what's going on. And yeah, so it's natural for him to see whatever I'm doing, you know.
100%. Obviously, his dad's the Sharks. That must be incredible for him at school to go, my dad is this incredible champion.
I don't think they know anything about that over here. He don't look at me like that. He just looks at me as his dad. So I'm probably a bit whack of what I'm doing, you know? It's like, in a way. Nah, he's very proud. He loves the belts. I gave the belts to him and it's in his room and stuff. So he loves that. But he's still only 4 years old, so he don't really understand what it's about. But for me, it's about like leaving that legacy to him and for him to just inspire him when he grows older and when he do understand. And that's why the Lima fight was such a important moment for me as well, because it was not just to show the world, but it's also about showing my son. And instead of saying, hey, we don't give up in my family, and that's the thing I want to bring on to him. But it's easiest to do it with actions and not just words. So never complain about anything.
When you put it into that context, it's pretty crazy, your story. You have this moment with Lima, which is incredible, where you fight for adversity and you carry on. You get this victory over Jack Cartwright, which would be a massive one in the UK. Then you're right back on that stage and fighting Lima for the title again.
Yeah, that's pretty much the script, isn't it? So yeah, but right now my focus is not on the Lima fight, because God knows where he is when I'm done fighting with Jack. So my focus for this fight has been Jack. It's been the focus for this fight has been this fight for a long time, like in the back of my mind, because I always wanted to fight Jack when he was in Cage Warriors. The circumstances at that point was just not right, but I feel like they're very right now, and I can't wait. So I've said it before, like as soon as I got the offer, I said yes right away. It was no doubt in me to fight this guy, because it's a fight we've been wanting for a long time. And I was so happy to see when he got signed with the Octagon. And I was even more happy that he started putting my name in his mouth, because then I know he's in for a treat. And yeah, I think he's a bit of an overrated fighter. He has this mysterious thing about him. But to be honest, before the Octagon, last Octagon fight, he fought like, he just fought a flyweight in Octagon on a week notice. And before that, he lost his two last fights, even though he got the victory on paper in Cage Warriors, but he lost that fight. And every time he goes running. You don't see him. And he comes back when everybody forgot about him. So the only thing people remember is those two knockouts he has in one night. That's like over 4 years ago. And I don't buy into that hype. Like, you need to earn your respect in this sport, and you earn your respect by staying active. So yeah, it's going to be a good fight, and I can't wait to put it out there. He is a tough guy, and that's what I want. I want the best. I want to fight the best. Well, he's also, yeah, he has this thing about him that I want to take away from him.
Absolutely. Jonas, it's been an absolute privilege talking to you as ever. I can't wait to watch you fight on January the 27th in Newcastle. I think it's going to be an incredible war. But before I let you go, is there anything else you would like to add? And secondly, I watched a clip of you the other day. The first album you ever bought was Greatest Hits for Kids. What was your favourite song on that album?
Fuck knows, I don't remember that. I've got punched too much in my head for remembering these things. I don't even remember most of my childhood anyway. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, great hearing from Jonas ahead of his massive fight. I think it's one we're all looking forward to. And another man on the bill is Stuart Austin. For those who watch MMA regularly, the UFC, he previously beat Tom Aspinall. If he wins this weekend, he will get a shot at the Octagon heavyweight title. He talks all about that old fight with Tom Aspinall. He talks about his German heritage, his time in England, his run for the Olympic Games. So here's Mr. Stuart Austin.
Right, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Stuart Austin ahead of an absolutely massive Octagon show in Newcastle. And it must be difficult timing, Stuart, because we've just had Christmas. You'll have had to train all the way through that ahead of this big show. Tell me about Christmas Day. How was it? Were you having to handle your diet? Were you having to stay off the pigs and blankets? Because I know you're in the festive spirit, because I saw your Christmas jumper on Instagram.
No, I was actually not too bad. Because I'm a heavyweight, so my weight isn't too much of an issue. I do have to stay under 120 kilos, which is about 19 stone. And I did, I tickled the weight a little bit. I tickled it a bit, but I'm back beneath now. Now I'm feeling good. I kind of, because I went back home to my family, my parents and that, and my brother. So I went to a gym back there, trained with some different guys as well. So it's actually, it was good for me. It gave me some different looks.
Fantastic. I want to get on to this massive fight you have, but before that, I want to roll back the years, look through your life a little bit. And firstly, I believe that not one, not two, not three, but four people have referred to you as the most handsome man in UK MMA. Is that true? And if so, who are these people?
I mean, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news for other guys, but you know, if four people are saying it, you know, it can't be wrong. Again, naming names feels a little bad, but you know, like, it's one of those ones.
It absolutely is. I mean, it's a fantastic privilege to be referred to that. But what would be even better would be referred to as an Octagon champion, because that's something that could happen in the very near future for you. Obviously, you've got to get through Palaz and then Hatif Moawalewicz. So firstly, let's look at the big poll. He's a great matchup for you. Talk me through this fight.
Yeah, he's big is the word. He is a big old unit. He's probably like 6'6", big power puncher. He kicks a lot. His last fight, he showed a bunch of wrestling and ground and pound that he's not sort of really shown much before. So yeah, he's a bit of a handful. To be honest though, like, I feel like he's kind of a bit of a hammer, you know, like he wants to be the one, you know, putting on them. He's not so clever on the defensive. So I'm going to have to kind of like, you know, like take it to him a little bit and make him fight my fight rather than his. But yeah, he is a big old weapon.
Most certainly is. It should be a fantastic fight. Assuming you get him, Hatif Moa probably awaits for the heavyweight title, possibly later in the year. We know his story. He was shot in a case of mistaken identity, but he had a very close fight for the Octagon title. I was wondering if you saw that and, you know, do you think he can beat him?
Honestly, I didn't even watch it. You know, I heard about it. I didn't even bother watching it because I'd already got Adam as my name. So I'm focused on Adam right now. That said, I think I match up real well against Hatif. Obviously, he's a decent guy. His record, you know, speaks for itself. He's a really solid guy. But I think, like, stylistically wise, I actually think he might be an easier matchup for me than Adam. I think he looks to, you know, throw looping shots and try and take you down. And not many people have really had any luck taking me down before. And I think he's kind of like, he's a little bit short for heavyweight. He's a little bit, you know, like, swingy. He doesn't really set much up. I just think the matchup's good for me. He's a solid fighter. You don't win the belt otherwise. But that said, I think I'll school Hatif. I don't think he'll win a round on me.
That's very interesting, because we could do this fight in England, couldn't we? It'd be a massive fight between you and Hatif, and obviously you're very confident you can beat him. But by the sounds of things, we could also do it in Germany, because you're a German speaker, aren't you, Stuart?
Barely. I mean, I can... when I was younger, I used to speak a little bit, because I am... my granddad was German. You know, he came over, I don't know, about eight years ago, you know, if you worked that one out. yeah, so... I Germany suits me. I know they have a show in March, which like will be like January, February, March, you know, like straight off the bat for the belt. But I would really like to fight that, because it's where my mum's family are from. So it'd be really kind of cool to go and fight there. And I, you know, like he might, you know, he's not a natural born German, you know, like an. I'm, you know, I've got that blood in my veins, so that'd be quite fun to do. It'd be quite a good one, and I have good memories of Germany. You know, I had a fight there before, and it went well. So yeah, so I think I'd quite like to fight out there. That said, I've heard they're doing some pretty cool venues later this year in the UK, which I definitely want to be involved in. So we'll see.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic to see you either holding the German flag in Germany or the British flag in England with that belt around your waist. That would be great to see. But your career has been a crazy one, right? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, did you have your first seven fights without any MMA training whatsoever?
Yeah, I had half a dozen fights. Like when I first started training, I'd got a background in judo. And I was pretty good at judo, but look, you know, obviously the grappling is solid. And yeah, me and my brother rocked up, and we had, you know, I had a few fights, and he had a couple. And yeah, just competed a bunch. But it was kind of a different time back then, you know. It was the landscape has changed. But yeah, it was pretty wild. Like, I can't remember, 17 or maybe 18. Yeah, and we just wanted to have some fun, really. It was just because it seemed like a fun thing to do. And then eventually I got cracked by somebody. And I was like, oh man, I better start taking this seriously.
And you touched on your brother there. Was he an Olympian? And what was it like going through that journey with him?
Yeah, he went to 2012. You know, like he's like I said, I started in judo. He carried on with judo. To be honest, he kind of led the way for me. He's 5 years older, and you know, like he's pretty. His judo is pretty awesome, and kind of like for me, it was like it was kind of surreal because when I was younger, I finished judo properly when I was about 18. But my dream, you know, when I was basically from about a few years into judo, from when I was like 8 or 9, was to go to the Olympics. And, you know, to kind of, you know, that's the dream for people competing in judo. And so when I stopped and found, you know, like before I really found MMA, it was kind of like the end of what I wanted to, you know, like my whole life's plan. I hadn't thought about a job. I hadn't thought about, you know, what I was going to do with any of that type of stuff. It was just go to the Olympics. That's the goal, go to the Olympics. So, like, even though I'd fought before, when I kind of stopped judo, you know, in my head, there wasn't really a clear path in UK MMA to make it as a fighter. So, like, it was kind of like the end of, I was like, what the hell am I going to do? And I kind of stumbled around for, it was only like 6-8 months before I started training properly and working things out. And, yeah, once I kind of went from there and found judo, then it was kind of like, just kind of went running from there. But like, so a few years later, when my brother actually started, went to the games, it was absolutely insane. Like, just because it's one of those ones where you kind of see, like, obviously, like, it was his dream as well, but like, it's, you know, obviously I love my brother so much, and to see him achieve that. While, you know, like in a way, it's kind of a reflection of what I didn't do. It was crazy emotional. It was crazy emotional. You know, like I was like at the same time, like really happy for him and just kind of a bit like, oh, this is, you know, kind of this was meant to be my path as well. So, yes, it was a bit of a funny one.
It's amazing. Obviously, he went on his path and did amazingly well. You've got on your path and done fantastic things, leading to a massive victory in your career over Tom Aspinall. We know how well he's done in his career, winning the UFC interim title. Talk me through that fight. Talk me through the submission and how amazing it is for you to have got that win, considering everything he's gone on to do.
Yeah, man, it's definitely stood the test of time. It's very, very nicely. It was a long time ago. I took my first loss in Bellator. I think you'd gone 8-1 at that time. So like, I took my first loss. Bellator cut me, and this is like basically, you know, it's a pretty hard one. The first L, it sucks. Came to fight in an old UK show called Bama, and I will swear blind, I got done by the judges. It's just is what it is. What can you do? I fought like an idiot as well, but I still got done by the judges. So I was on a 2-fight losing streak, and there's this young, you know, like big, strong, up and coming kid who nobody wanted to fight. I'd been told a lot of people had turned him down, and in my head at the time, I was just like, kind of in the perspective of just, you know, like I'm losing to, if I lose 3 in a row, what's the point? If I can't beat some, you know, like some up and coming kid, then like, you know, he's the guy, I'm not. So I just went into it kind of a bit gung ho. It's like do or die. And it, you know, like if you watch the fight, it's interesting. You know, obviously you can see at that time, you know, his striking, you know, was better than mine. He's super aggressive. I was predominantly able to win, you know, out wrestle him and win the grappling exchanges until kind of it leads up to the finish. Everyone's seen, a lot of people have seen the finish, but not the actual fight. Basically, what you don't see is I've been ground and pound. I ended up standing up over him. I try to do a Superman punch through his guard from standing to ground. Halfway through this, he goes to up kick me, and I panic, duck, and run. And we end up in the weirdest scramble I've ever been in a fight. And I end up on top with this giant gorilla on top of me, clubbing me in the side of the head. And yeah, like, I essentially pull guard, which is a big no-no, obviously, in MMA. It's such a bad idea. And then managed to get the leg lock. So yeah, it's a huge win, but like it's one of those ones, you know, like from there, Aspinall's like, you know, like springboarded from that. He's an amazing fighter. You know, his achievements, he's looking like the man at heavyweight. And, you know, it looks like even John Jones don't want to fight him right now. So, you know, like I got my little win back then, but I don't think he's too worried about me right now. I don't think I'm in his, in the equation for him.
Well, it'd be great, obviously, if he can go on to win that UFC heavyweight title. You can go on to win that Octagon title, and that'd be fantastic for British MMA. But, Stuart, thank you so much for giving me some of your time today. I really appreciate it. All the luck in the world for this massive fight that you've got on Newcastle on the 27th. But before I let you go, is there anything else that you would like to discuss?
No, man. I'm good, thank you. Appreciate it. Nice to speak to you, James.
Yeah, some fantastic stuff from Stuart there. Sticking on the combat sports theme. Paul, you took in all the boxing last night from Liverpool. In the main event, we had Tasha Jordis, Michaela Meyer. There's been outrage after the fight, many having the American winning. Which way did you score it?
I thought it was a very close fight, James, to be honest with her. And I probably just edged for the American lady, to be honest with her. I thought Meyer was very good technically. I thought she moved really well and boxed really well. You know, Natasha Jonas has been a wonderful champion as well, and still is. You know, she got the decision, but, you know, it was one of those. A lot of the rounds could have gone either way. You know, a lot of the time it's what you like, it's what the judges like, and we can all score it differently. You can watch a fight three or four times and score it differently three or four times, can't you? So I wouldn't say it was, you know, an outrageous decision, but, you know, I felt a bit sorry for Meyer. I thought she put a lot into that fight, and people were saying at the start of the fight, is this her last big chance, you know, at the age of 33 now, if she loses this fight, do the doors start closing on her? So let's hope not, because she's still got a lot to offer. It was a great fight, great spectacle, but Natasha Jonas just come up with the result.
And then you look at the way Boxer, for example, act after the fight, and all the tweets are encouraging words towards Tasha Jonas and positivity about her big victory. Do you think it's a little bit tone deaf, considering if you look at all those comments under those posts, it's all pro Michaela Meyer?
Yeah, that did seem a bit strange, that, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know with social media sometimes. I mean, there was a fight at the beginning of that night that I thought was quite a controversial one, with a controversial stoppage as well. So with a guy turning his back, which was a very, very strange fight. So, yeah, it was a strange sort of night, really, that one, to be honest with you. There was a few fights. I thought the Jack Cullen and Zach Chelly fight wasn't the greatest, really, to be honest with you, you know, considering it was for a British title. So it was a bit of a disappointing night. But I thought the main event was good. I thought Jonas, you know, she always entertained. She's a good character as well. She's nice to speak to outside of the ring, and, you know, seems a really grounded person. So pleased for her to get the win. But, you know, for me, I thought Meyer got it, but not by a lot, though. So, but I think the public, you know, they sort of make their own minds up sometimes, don't they? And some of the cards were strange, were the way they were scored, really, because it was a split decision, and yet one judge had it miles away from the other judge. Sometimes it's difficult to see how far you can score a fight that far out, for me, really. I mean, some of the judges are a bit sort of way off.
And then you look at the news coming out of Boxer today. The headline here from No Smoke Boxing says, an associate of convicted match fixer Mazir Majid allegedly received a cash payment of almost 80 grand in a bag from a boxer representative at a meeting in London last July. Without getting too deep into that particular situation, Paul, do you think when we get headlines like this, and then you get Tasha Jonas and Michaela Meyer, the result and the way the judges scored it, do you think fans are getting a little bit disillusioned with the sport of boxing?
I think they could do. And I think many are already. I think everybody knows there's still those underhand things go on in boxing, I think, and how you ever stop that, I don't really know, to be honest with you. But you do get some strange things. You get some strange matchmaking as well, as we'll probably talk about, because there's been some strange fights talked about recently. But I think particularly with Sky Sports, I've noticed some of the fancied fighters that they have on there, you know, they're sort of headline fighters who they seem to be putting a lot behind. When I see who they're getting pitched against, a lot of the time it's men against boys, and I don't know, there's a lot not right with the sport at the moment for me, and judging is one thing, but I don't know. I'm not saying it's a corrupt sport, but I think there's patterns of it that where it could be, because it's so unreliable now. It's unbelievable, like you said, and referees scoring. We've seen it abroad as well. It's difficult, and it could put people off, because people want to go and see people fight toe to toe, and there'd be a great outcome. But a lot of the time, it's not the outcome that you're looking for.
It's most certainly not. And another fighter who could be making a comeback in a fight that I don't think the public are necessarily begging for, considering, you know, this is a guy who could potentially have retired at the top against Amir Khan. But Kell Brook is looking to come back, potentially against Chris Eubank Jr. What do you make of that fight? Would you like to see it? Or would you rather Kell keep the gloves off?
I saw Kell Brook at the Liverpool Arena at the weekend, and it looked, you know, like he was back there, you know, sort of pitching himself for a fight, which is normally what happens. And I was taken by surprise, really. I thought he'd finished now. I'm not sure how old Kell is. You'll probably be able to tell him. He's 36, 37. He's definitely mid-30s. So he's had a lot of tough fights, Kell Brook, as well, and got a lot of miles on his clock as well. So, yeah, that would be a fight that would interest me against Chris Eubank Jr. I mean, they always do, don't they? For me, as a boxing fan, I mean, I love the British dust-ups. I really do. That would be a good fight, I think. But I'm not sure. I mean, for Kell Brook, has he been out at the top level for too long now? Or is it a good fight for Chris Eubank Jr. as well? I don't know. I'd like to see Eubank Jr. against Conor Benn, but whether we're going to see that, I don't know. That just seems to keep drifting away from us. But I'd be surprised if Kell Brook comes back. But, you know, it sounds like that's going to happen. So yeah, it'll be good to see him back in the ring. But I don't know how much he's got left, really, Kell, because he's took a lot of punishment over the years.
He has. I mean, the last year for him was a big one, obviously beating Amir Khan, which was fantastic for him. When you look at the whole of last year, there were some great performances, and the Ring magazine has named Nuya Inouye as the fighter of the year, beating Stephen Fulton and then unifying the entire division over Marlon Tapales. Do you agree that Nuya Inouye was the fighter of the year, or could it have gone to Crawford for his big victory over Errol Spence?
Yeah, it could have gone to Crawford, but, you know, he's been a terrific fighter. You know, he's had a great year, had some good wins there. So I don't think you can really argue with that. I know he's a guy that you sing very, very highly of as well. So I'm sort of in agreement with that one, really. Yeah, I could have gone to Crawford, but no, I don't think there's any sort of injustice in him getting that. I think he's worked really hard for it and had some really big wins. And he's a terrific fighter as well, and one of the pound-for-pound best.
And there's been a lot coming out of Saudi Arabia this week, so let's go through some of the news. Firstly, we've got a big 5-on-5 between Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn, their two stables being pitted against each other. From your perspective, Paul, which promoter do you think is most likely to win that? And how do you feel about the fact that these are two men that have gone toe-to-toe for years and years and years, and now suddenly they seem to be on great terms?
I think it's great for the sport. I mean, if they're on great terms with each other, then it should be easy to matchmake and get the best fighters fighting each other. And, you know, we know with Warren and Hearn, they've both got terrific fighters in the stables, haven't they? You know, some of the world's best in there. So, you know, if this is going to open up really, really big fight nights, which is what the public want to see, and you know, what the television fans want to see as well, I think it could be great for the sport, James. I really do. So there should be some exciting nights. I mean, what's better than that? Having like sort of six massive fights on a bill. I mean, if you go back to Christmas on the 23rd before Christmas, we had that really big show there. We had Wilder on and Joshua on the same night as well. And that was really, really entertaining. And we saw some great fights. So that's what the fight fans want to see. So long may that continue, that relationship between the two, because they're both terrific promoters in the sport. They're very, very experienced. They've got some massive fighters on the book. So it should be good.
You mentioned Anthony Joshua there. He's had his next fight confirmed. He will be taking on Francis Ngannou. Is this a simple routine victory for Anthony Joshua, or can Francis Ngannou produce another big performance like he did against Tyson Fury?
I think if you'd have pitched this one to me sort of 6 to 8 months ago, I'd probably say that Anthony Joshua would wipe the floor with him. But having seen how he fought against Tyson Fury, no, I think he's a dangerous man. He proved that against Fury. I mean, Fury's one of the best, you know, if not the best in the world, isn't he? So very, very awkward man. And he gave him problems. So if he can give anybody who can give Tyson Fury problems, you know, you've got to give a lot of respect to, haven't you? And Anthony Joshua, to me, has got to prepare for this fight like he's fighting the best fighter in the world. And I think that's how you should go in all your fights. So if you get the best Anthony Joshua, he'll win the fight. He needs to be at his best, though, I think. And, you know, then he can move on from that. If Anthony Joshua gets a good victory in this, for me, his confidence will be going through the roof. You know, he's had a good win there, another good victory. Puts him right back in the mix, doesn't it? You know, a guy that was been written off sort of 12 months ago, you know, everyone's saying he'd gone, he's finished, his chin and things like that. Now he's right back up there. That's what boxing as a sport can be like. You know, you can be at the rock bottom 1 minute and the next minute you're back up there, everybody's talking about you. So confidence can be a wonderful thing. So I hope he gets a good result and then he's back up there in the top three or four and banging on the doors for likes of Fury and Usyk.
And then one last big fight for Saudi Arabia. Artur Beterbiev, Dmitry Bivol. Beterbiev obviously putting in a massive performance against Callum Smith. On paper, when you look at this initially, have you got a clear winner in that one? And obviously, we've not caught up since Beterbiev beat Callum Smith. How do you feel about sort of the Liverpool contingent being so anti-Beterbiev in the aftermath of that fight?
To be honest with you, I thought Beterbiev was absolutely outstanding in that fight against Callum Smith. Callum Smith was as brave as they come and he gave Beterbiev problems. But for me, I just sat there and my mouth was wide open for most of it because I've never seen anybody bash Callum Smith up like that. He bashed him up like he was a little lad. He absolutely pummeled him. I mean, you only had to see him at the weekend how matte of his face was. And for Beterbiev as well, the fitness of the man, he didn't even look like he was breathing heavily or he broke into a sweat. He's like a machine. He's like a Terminator just coming at you. Absolute robot. I've never seen anybody box like that for a long, long time, and especially in that division. So I thought it was a tremendous performance from him. And for the fight against Bivol, I think is a fantastic fight. You've got two blokes there who it's going to be difficult to split him, but if I had to pick a winner at the moment, just going off what I've seen recently, it'd be Beterbiev, the way he destroyed Callum Smith. But I hope that's not the end for Smith because I really like him as a fighter, and I think he showed in that fight that he's still got something left, but it's what opponent he gets matched up against next, I suppose. But I think he's still got a bit to offer in the sport. But hats off to Beterbiev because I thought he was sensational for a guy of sort of 38, 39 years of age as well. Wow, he's got years in front of him.
He most certainly does, Paul. And last boxing question of the day for you. We've talked about all the positive aspects of these fights going to Saudi Arabia. Oscar De La Hoya is adamantly against taking his promotion out there. What do you make of that stance from De La Hoya?
I suppose it's up to him, isn't it, really? It's his decision. I don't know what his reasons are for that. You'd have to speak to him, wouldn't you, and find out. But from what we've seen so far, they've been very enjoyable fight nights that have been on. The fighters seem to enjoy themselves. And, you know, it's a nice part of the world to go to, isn't it, I suppose. So I think sometimes you've got to look at beyond the politics, haven't you, in sport. Politics and sport shouldn't mix, and it tends to do sometimes, doesn't it? So we'd have to see what he says about that. But it probably is lost at the moment because that seems to be where a lot of the money is.
Right, and now it's time to move on to the world of football, Rob. Manchester United have officially appointed a new chief executive. What are your immediate emotions?
Yeah, the Jim Radcliffe effect comes into play. James Omar Berada has come in. He was the CEO at Manchester City and the machine that is that all over the world, bringing Manchester City to a new level. Hopefully he can reignite the fire in Manchester United and take them back to the promised land of winning Premier Leagues and European Cups.
What do you make of the fact that this is a guy obviously coming from Manchester City? I mean, obviously they've had a great deal of success over the last few years, but the two clubs are in very different states.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a big challenge for him, looking at where Manchester United is now and where he's coming from. But he was at the range at Man City. He knows he has contacts around the world through his Man City experience. So I'm sure he'll be bringing that experience to Old Trafford. And like we said, as supporters, we want to be back on that pedestal competing. And he will take us there. I think it's not probably a flagship signing. It's probably not going to make waves across the football world. But sometimes the signings that you're not quite you know, up to date on and don't make the massive headlines are the ones that technical forward.
They are, Rob. And then you look at the deals that he's brokered, the likes of Erling Haaland and Jack Grealish. Massive, obviously, but you spoke a little bit there about the ones who go under the radar. And he's got a reputation for generating revenue for academies. And Manchester United, a club that has produced so many great players through that scheme, from the likes of, you know, your Paul Scholes, your Ryan Giggs, your Gary Nevilles, more recently your Marcus Rashfords. It's so important for him to get that academy working well.
Yeah, bringing the youth through is the most important thing, especially with financial fair play. James, you can't rely on going out and spending the big bucks and bringing people in. You need to be able to balance your books. So having a conveyor belt of youth players who were born and bred in the club and understand what it's all about, but also have the quality to play at the highest level, will make the big difference. Don't forget with Ferguson, who brought the class of 92 through, we have forming that. It's been a while since they've been able to bring another class of 92 through, but you're hoping it'll come in the next few years.
I mean, United have said that the club is determined to put football and performance on the pitch back at the heart of everything they do, and that this will be the first step on the new journey. The question is, Rob, with Manchester United in such turmoil, how many steps are needed to get us back?
Well, it's more like a jog than a journey, James. You're going to have to take a few years, especially the way the footballing world's set up now. It's not necessarily bringing people in with a financial fair play thing. It's about getting people out. And if Man United have big contracts for players who aren't willing to leave and play at a less wage, then you have problems getting rid of players, don't you? Which then becomes a problem balancing your books. So it will be then interesting to see how it plays out in the next few years with Manchester United. We're hoping that him coming in will make the difference, but it's not going to be a quick fix, James.
Do you think he'll be missed at Manchester City?
Yeah, I think he will. Obviously, being the figurehead is a big thing at Manchester City. Obviously, they have been on this big journey with, layers all over the world trying to be the biggest club in the world. And they have kind of achieved it in modern football. And I suppose he thinks job done there. And he's looking at Manchester United and reincarnating this giant of football to be number one once again.
And then sticking with the Manchester City theme, obviously, Everton have been hit for financial fair play issues. Manchester City, do they really deserve the same thing? They've yet to be hit with the punishment that a lot of fans deem necessary.
Well, it's going to be very interesting. Obviously, Everton deducted 10 points. Everton fans not very happy with Manchester City having so many financial fair play penalties against them. How will the Premier League react to that? Fining them doesn't really make a difference. Deducted in points, if you've got one financial fair play equals 10 points. If you've got 115 financial fair penalties possibly against you, what does that mean to a club like Manchester City? How will the Premier League and the Football Association punish Man City if they do need to punish Man City to make sure they do it again? And that's the big challenge in it, I suppose, for them. But like you say, Man City don't think they've done anything wrong, and they'll fight tooth and nail against every charge to make sure they get through.
I mean, they will, Rob. They are going to fight things. I mean, worst case scenario for City is relegation and possibly even expulsion. Surely that's not possible.
No, I don't see a relegation to the second division because, the Manchester City aren't the big club with big players, and it would send a message to the footballing world that you can't mess with the financial fair play. But there'll be a brave football association to do that, because Man City wouldn't take that line down.
No, they wouldn't, Rob. I mean, you look at Manchester City, a team who've dominated for such a long period of time. Is there an element of, I don't want to say favouritism, but when Everton have been hit and Nottingham Forest aren't particularly happy either, Manchester City are skating by, are fingers going to get pointed?
Yeah, I think they will. I think if the Premier League and the Football Association don't make an example of Manchester City, then questions will be asked. It might not deter other teams to do that in the future. So it will be fascinating to see what happens with Manchester City in the next weeks and months to come.
Yeah, Rob. And then you look at a team like Salford right now, who are 21st in the league at the moment. They're taking on Bradford this week, a team who are playing you know, relatively well at the moment. Are Salford in trouble here?
Well, yeah, they've struggled in the last few weeks. They brought a new manager in, hoping for that new manager bounce. They need to start winning, James, to get themselves off the bottom of the table and up into mid-table playoff spots. It will be a massive task to get in them playoffs now, where they stand and how many games to go. So I'm going to hope for mid-table security. It will be the aim and then build for 2024-2025.
And then they've obviously got this game against Crewe as well, coming up on Saturday, a team who were in fourth at the time of recording. A game they're probably favoured to lose. When you look at Salford and the dip in form from last season, if anything, we expected Salford to get better, to improve. That's what we said maybe in the last campaign, that granted, they hadn't gone up, but there was time to put things right, and this was a building process for Salford. So why have we dropped so far down?
It's a problem, isn't it? The pressure of being the class of 92's club and you know, having to bring the right players in at the right money. We talk about financial fair play. It's even harder as you go down the division. So Salford may have suffered with that as well. I'm sure they'll be looking to bounce back. I'm sure they'll be looking for the fans to get down to the Peninsula and support them. And we're behind them on the Sports Zone on Salford City Radio. We feel that they could turn the corner and get back up to that playoff spot.
We do, Rob. And a team that we probably aren't quite as behind is Liverpool. They are currently riding high at the top of the Premier League. A 4-0 win against Bournemouth just recorded. Not ideal at the moment for Manchester United and Manchester City fans as well.
Yeah, 5 points clear, James, coming into the end of January. You know, title contenders. It's all going to come down to these next few weeks with Mo Salah in the AFCON. Will Liverpool be able to continue to get them wins till he comes back? That's the big question. Going to be fascinating. There's not just United and City. There's Tottenham. There's Arsenal. There's teams, Newcastle. Everybody chasing them. But like I say, Liverpool, they've won many titles before. They've won many European Cups before. They know how to deal with pressure. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we most certainly will, Rob. And you look at those teams in second, third, fourth, City, Arsenal, Villa, all on 43 points at the moment. Manchester United, 11 points behind on 32. Is the bridge becoming a little bit too far for them to catch?
It's a pressure moment for Manchester United. With Ten Hag, he needs to be able to get his team together. But with football, it's pressure in it, and one thing you don't have in football is time. He needs to keep winning and hoping that the gap will close. But we'll be fascinated to see what happens in the next few months.
Yeah, we most certainly will, Rob. And now I think it's time to throw it back to Paul and yourself to talk all things rugby league.
Yes, let's start with Swinton Lions. Paul, they were in action this weekend, a friendly against Helens, and were victorious, 28 points to 18. Great win for the Lions.
Yeah, typical Swinton. I mean, we've not won an away game against St. Helens since 1980, and then Swinton go and win there. So, yeah, a great win. I wouldn't like to say when the last time Swinton won at Lee before that. At Saints before that. So, I'm confused here. So, I've been shocked by Swinton. But, yeah, great win. I know it's only a pre-season game, as they say, but that's a terrific win to go to St. Helens and get a result. And from all accounts, they played some fantastic rugby and defended really, really well. So, yeah, they probably played some younger players, Saints. But anybody who's in the Saints system is a good player, aren't they? Whether they're a youngster or an academy player or whatever. So it'll do Swinton the world of good. A massive confidence boost going into their season, which starts pretty soon now, doesn't it? So yeah, great result for the Lions and Alan and their coach, Alan Kilshaw.
Yeah, it's fantastic win for them. Here is Alan, Swinton Lions head coach, giving his views at the final whistle.
And also, we can back our day. We can try that pass, especially if we're, you know, if we're smart with it. I think we've got to build our game. I think for the second half, we came out and I think we threw a cut out pass on last tackle and we ended up conceding off the back of that. It's just when and where to do it, and that's, you know, that's just having that game management and that game sense, I suppose.
And now 1895 next week against North Wales.
Yeah, it'll be a challenge because they'll be up for it. The League One clubs will want to prove a point, and it's probably not a local derby on paper, but a lot of their players will have come through systems with our players, if you like. You know, a lot of them are from Warrington, Saints, Wigan, you know, Lee Academies, or have played there. So, and, you know, we think we've got, you know, four or five lads who've been at Crusaders either last season or the season before. So it'll be all on, and they'll be up for it. And you know, we've got to make sure we match their, you know, enthusiasm, intensity. But you know, I'm confident that we will. We'll have a good week's preparation, and hopefully, you know, Sunday at half five, we'll be talking about a win.
And under the format of the 1895, although it's not at this stage a straight knockout, it almost is, because of the groups being three teams. It can become difficult to progress with a loss, so it maybe doesn't change much in the cup format sense.
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. And you know, I spoke about it yesterday. We had the launch, and you know, I spoke to you on Thursday night about it. You know, it's hard, because they're saying that we need to play less games because of the head knocks, but then they're putting in 2-3 extra games. You know, we've got 27 rounds in March to come. You know, that's probably the negative side, but the positive side is, you know, your 2 wins, quarter final, your 3 games away from Wembley, and leading Swinton out of Wembley, and, you know, give our lads the opportunity to get at Wembley is a big thing. So we'll take it, you know, as serious as we can do. Probably won't push anyone who's 50-50 in both games, because we have got the bigger pitch to think about. But every game we play, we'll go out and we'll try and win. And, you know, it is a prestigious competition, and it is an opportunity for you to do well in the cup.
We look forward to the road to Wembley. Thank you, Alan.
Cheers.
That was Alan giving us his views after the match. Paul, obviously, it's only pre-season. He's looking at the big picture and building for the championship season. It's going to be exciting for these Swinton Lions fans. Can they take this win?
But no, Alan Kilshaw, as we said, he's done a good job where he's been, and I think he's a very, very exciting appointment for Swinton. And yeah, they'll keep the feet on the ground after that, but I don't care what anybody says, winning matches in pre-season does you no harm whatsoever. You know, it's all about confidence building. And I know, you know, Swinton had a good workout against Salford, didn't they, last weekend. And another good workout this weekend, stepping up in the intensity levels. And they've got a big season in front of them as well. So a really good start there for them. And yeah, that's going to do them the world of good going forward towards a very, very tough championship season.
Yeah, Salford are in pre-season training in a camp in Portugal. Obviously, the British weather isn't kind with the snow and the ice and the wind. So having a bit of sun on their backs and a bit of temperature in their nostrils will help them prepare for the 2024 season.
Yeah, well, it's warmed up a bit now. I think it's about, well, compared to last week, it's been tropical, hasn't it, this weekend, 10, 11 degrees. But no, I think going over abroad to Portugal, I think they've gone to, haven't they? And, you know, the weather there is probably terrific, isn't it? Nice and warm, and you can, it's good for your body, I suppose, as well, isn't it? You know, you don't want to be stiff in cold weather and that, you know, relaxing a bit more in the warmth, I think it does your body the world of good, doesn't it? A bit of vitamin D inside you as well with the sun. You can work some of your drills on the training pitch, and, you know, a bit of luxury there for the players as well. Good bit of team bonding for them as well, all going away together. So I think that'll do the players the world of good, that. And, you know, they'll come back, you know, in a few days' time, and it's all guns blazing then for the start of the season. Then we've got a friendly coming up against St Helens, and then before we know it, it'll be time for that match against Leeds, won't it? Because it's, what's the 16th of Feb, I think it is, isn't it? So we're less than a month away now to the start of the season. So, so yeah, it's really hotting up now.
Obviously, you know, we talk about the build-up to, you know, to the Leeds game in a few weeks' time. They've got the season launch in the Trafford Centre on the 27th of January. Opportunity for fans to get down there for autographs and pictures with the fans, get merchandise. It's a really important moment for Salford and the supporters to get together and build that community feel, because they talk about Salford Devils being that community club, and it's the first step in that direction for Paul Rowley's men, and obviously Paul King with the club. He needs as many fans down there to put money in the pockets of him to be able to entice new players.
Well, certainly, yeah, and I think the club did a great thing, you know, last weekend when they had you know, the training session there and people in the East Stand. I think that was a really good idea. It was a bit of a cold day, wasn't an early start, but, you know, I think the Trafford Centre is quite a focal point for people to get to in the Northwest. And it's a bit tricky sometimes with traffic and what have you, but, you know, it's a big enough place, and if you can get down there early enough, I'm sure you'll really enjoy that. You know, it'd be great to see the players there, and, you know, if you go with your mum and dad, or your mum's taking the kids or whatever, they can do a bit of shopping and have a coffee while they're there, can't you? So everyone's a winner. So I think it'll be a good day, that. And like we said before, the Trafford Centre, how many people go in there per day? I'm not too sure, but every time I drive past there at work, I always get stuck with traffic. So, you know, it's an iconic sort of place to go, isn't it? And I'm sure there's a lot of people who go there who've not heard of Salford Rugby League Club, or probably don't really follow rugby league. So if we can spread our name there, and, you know, even get a few people to sort of come and watch the club and find out about the club, I think that's good. Like you said, it's getting out in the community, telling the community what you're all about, and you know, trying to attract new people and new supporters.
Yeah, so exciting. Obviously, the people of Salford need to get behind the club, both Salford and Swinton in rugby league. Big clubs who have great history, and you're hoping that the people of Salford and Swinton get behind them and cheer them on in the 2024 season. With a minute to go, Paul, if you had a message to the Salford fans and the Swinton fans who are listening to this, what would you say to them?
Oh, just keep getting behind your club. We know they do. Salford and Swinton have got some tremendous supporters, you know, loyal supporters who've been going for donkey's years. And it's not those people you've got to target, really. It's new people. So the ones that are going, keep up the good work, keep behind your clubs and enjoy the sport of rugby league, because Swinton and Salford are two fantastic clubs with great tradition.
Yeah, very exciting times with 30 seconds to go. Thoughts for this season, hoping for a playoff finish for Salford?
Playoff finish and a trip to Wembley, Rob, please. I'll do, mate.
just add it to the shopping list. That's the most important thing. Big thanks for joining us on the Sports Zone on Salford City Radio. Don't forget you can join us on a Tuesday and a Wednesday for us talking all things sport in Salford, talking football and rugby and boxing and UFC and lots of other sports. Please join us. Big thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you soon for more Salford Sporting Chat on your Salford City Radio, on your Sports Zone.